Okay, very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 9th June 2020, Tuesday class. Today is the last day of our CMCO. So tomorrow onward will be RMCO, Recovery Movement Control Order. So things were like slowly adjust and go back to normal. So hopefully, all Kayamita can actually make full use of this MCO period, to cultivate, to develop clearer understanding of the Dhamma and to really progress along the path of Dhamma beautifully. Just now we had Christy, having a very short but very good sharing with us. She relayed to us how she really experienced that time of peace within the calmness, the tranquility, the stillness. And she started to realize what I mean by there is no meditator inside while meditating. The meditator is your thought, the one that is very chattering, that is trying to do a lot of things, that is trying to actually create the heedless thinking. So when you start to develop the understanding of meditation through the awareness, then the silent mind, that nature, will understand. Without thought, you are already in the meditative state and you are so different. You are just the awareness nature. There is no egoic mind. There is no being inside there. There is nothing inside there. And there is only peace, tranquility, clarity, silence. That's why that nature can meditate, can understand the silent awareness that can observe silently without any reaction from mind. That's why there is no choice involved. There is no condemnation. There is no movement, nothing. And that mind can understand, can awaken, can insight into the normal. If you read today's Krishnamurti quote, the daily quote, you will understand. Later we will go through it. Okay, now we will develop the condition for us to do the chanting. So let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Okay. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Quan Sư Hình Phật Sa. Namo Quan Sư Hình Phật Sa. Namo Quan Sư Hình Phật Sa. Namo A Di Đà Phật. 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 Namo Bổn Sư Hình Phật Sa. Namo Bổn Sư Hình Phật Sa. Namo Bổn Sư Hình Phật Sa. Namo Di Chang Vương Phật Sa. Namo Di Chang Vương Phật Sa. Namo Di Chang Vương Phật Sa. Namo Phổ Phật Sa. Namo Phổ Phật Sa. Namo Phổ Phật Sa. Arahang Sammasambuddho Bhagavo Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. sabbadasa namo atasa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhasa buddhang saranang gacchami dhammang saranang gacchami sanghang saranang gacchami dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami kamesu micacara veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami mosavada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami surameraya majapamadatana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect triple gem. Buddhang pujami. Dhammang pujami. Sanghang pujami. Okay, let us relax body and mind, then maintain some form of attention. Okay, as usual, we will have our half an hour of silent inner awareness meditation to prepare our meditative mind so that we can continue with the sharing of this. Today, we shall continue from the Heart Sutta, second edition, page 98. We are at part 2. But before that, I may go through with you on the J. Krishnamurti code that I sent out today for sharing. So we are at lesson 17. Okay, so as far as meditation is concerned, I think by now all of you are familiar. You just have to relax body and mind, completely relax. Don't try to know, don't try to do anything. Relax body and mind. Then let the mind settle down. You just have to maintain awareness. Just aware. Whatever that arises, aware. Finish. Aware. Finish. You can be aware of your object of meditation or aware of your heart deep or around the heart area, whatever vibration or any tactile sensation. Then wherever it is most prominent and clear to you and suitable for you, you just silent everything, stay there. If you have developed the mind sweeping method, you will be able to have the ability to decide where you want to locate your mind. Because if you have done that, if you want the mind to be at the forehead, it will be at the forehead. If you want to be at the heart, it will be at the heart. If you want to be at the anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath, it will be there. So wherever you locate your mind, the awareness will pick it up. Any tactile sensation or movement. Then the awareness not only can pick up any other tactile sense experience or upon contact of any other sense basis, it can also be aware of your thought process, your mundane mind's movement. That's why you only need to silence everything. If you are not silent, you cannot observe. You cannot be in the meditative state of inner awareness, mindfulness. The moment you are not silent, your thought arise, chattering arise. Then you are preoccupied in that thinking process. The thought proliferation will start. Then you are entangled by that. Yeah. Then when you are preoccupied with the thought process, you are lost in thought. You cannot be silent to be aware of what is going on. So to meditate is to have the ability to be silent without thought, to observe. Yeah. Initially, because you are not skillful yet, the thought will arise. Let it arise, never mind. Don't suppress it, don't control it, don't do anything to it. That is natural. Without the spiritual faculty stabilized, thought will arise because of mental hindrance. Then when you are not stable in your ability to be mindful, to be peaceful, to be aware, and your wisdom is not stable yet, sankhara activity will be there. And this sankhara activity will continue as long as the spiritual faculty are not stable. But when the spiritual faculty are very stable, then you will come to see a lot of things and develop the understanding. Then through the understanding, you straighten your view, the initial wisdom. Then your mind become more peaceful, less reactive. That's why less sankhara activity. You realize you don't need to think. You only think when you need to think, when you want to contemplate, reflect, and develop some understanding. Otherwise, you are most of the time peaceful. Yeah. So unless there is inquiry, yeah, or when you are doing the second turning reflection, contemplation, and inquiry, otherwise, you don't really need to arise any thinking. So the meditative mind that is trained with the understanding is most of the time just aware, peaceful, silent. Then you will know what heedful living is. You will know what the trained mind is. It is so different from the untrained mind. With the untrained mind, you are heedless. You have no control. You don't know what is going on. You are just like a victim. You are just being like deluded by the thought process. Actually, the thought took over and lived your life. The thought, through its views, opinion, and conditioning, actually create the movement. Yeah. Well, you cannot understand, so you tend to listen to your thought, believe your thought. And everything that you want to develop understanding, you think by thinking you can understand. That's why you keep on going back to your thought process. And every time you think, you make contact, then through memory, your views, opinion, and conditioning, you only know how to act with that because you don't have wisdom. You don't have understanding. There is nothing to enable you to act. So you have to, through the meditative training, the silent mind, develop the understanding, the straightening of your views, to develop the initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara. And that will enable you to act. That will enable you to free the mind, liberate the mind. Don't be deluded by what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you take that view and think. So when you are not deluded, your mind become more calm, more tranquil, more peaceful. You don't stir your mind and react to sense experience like before. You can come to terms with the reality. You can see things as they are. You can accept the world as the world, people the way they are. And all this understanding will make you peaceful, quiet, tranquil, still. That's how you can develop the daily mindfulness, the meditative mind, and be heedful, be aware. That's how you transform and become a cultivator. Then from there, once you develop the wisdom, the penetrative understanding, awakening, you'll become Arya or enlightened being. Okay, with that, I think we were off the line. Then you can have your half an hour of silent inner awareness meditation. Okay, I will set the alarm now. You all can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. Stabilize it. These are the mind state that you need to meditate, that you need to develop the daily mindfulness. So the stability of mindfulness is very important. You can develop it until the mind enters sati, then through your daily mindfulness, the religious routine, you train your mind to be ever mindful, continuously aware throughout the day. Then use it to meditate, constantly meditating, means cultivating noble eightfold path through the first turning, second turning, and third turning. Okay, we will turn to page 6 of the chanting book. We will do the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities and devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the king of sages, which gives heaven and release nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakawalesu atra gacchantu devata Saddhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakka Mokkadang Dhamma Svanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Svanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Svanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho Vija charana sampanno sugato lokavidu Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sandhikko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pacha tam vedita po venohiti supatipano bhagavato saukasango ujupatipano bhagavato saukasango nyaya patipano bhagavato saukasango Samichi patipano bhagavato saukasango yadidam chatari purisa yukani atta purisa pugala esa bhagavato saukasango ahuneyo pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaneyo Anutarang Punyang Ke Punyak Sati Sadhu 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 Okay, you can be seated and just relax body and mind. Then we will continue our Dhamma sharing. Yeah? We will go to the J. Krishnamurti code first. This J. Krishnamurti code is to teach you how to develop the understanding of mindfulness, awareness, the art of observation, or in Krishnamurti word, learning about oneself by watching. Means when you are silent observing or watching without the observer, without the watcher. It's just the awareness that is aware. That is the meaning of sati, mindfulness. So I will read to you this very beautiful J. Krishnamurti quote so that you will understand. So J. Krishnamurti quote, there must be learning about oneself, which is self-knowledge, by watching or silent mind observing. So the requirement is you observe or you watch without any movement from the mundane mind. Means you are not there with the mundane mind condemning or justifying. Because when you do that, you are no longer in the state of awareness, mindfulness to observe. The thought is active. When the thought is active, the egoic mind prevents observation. All its movement and action come from the egoic mind's conditioning, views, opinion, and belief system, all those things. So it's no longer aware to observe, to understand. It is creating movement. When there is movement, there is heedlessness, there is thinking, there is thought process. So the ability to be aware ceases to be. So this understanding is very important. So I read again. Hopefully you can develop the understanding. There must be learning about oneself, with self-knowledge, by watching. Not condemning or justifying, but just watching. What do you watch? You watch how you function as a human being. You watch how your mind, the mundane mind, develop all this movement and conditioning. So just by watching the way you talk, how you arise the speech, most of the time if you are observant, watchful, mindful, that movement is of the egoic mind that is egoic, selfish. So the way you talk may not be sincere, may not be natural. So just by watching that, you will start to understand yourself, that you are not sincere. Your egoic mind that has the delusion, Sakyaditi, always has this insecurity, selfishness, desire, craving, negativity of mind state behind. So the way you talk is all with motive and all those things. Then sometimes you try to act out of it. You are not natural, not sincere. So you're supposed to watch or observe the way you talk, the way you walk, whether you are natural or like a heedless human being or living being. Yeah, that's why people who are heedless, they make mistakes. Yeah. Then they are not aware, not attentive. So they tend to make mistakes. Accident can happen. It's just like when you drive, while driving, if you are not attentive, you can make mistakes. Accident can happen. As you drive, you are lost in thought. But then suddenly, accident. Yeah. So a lot of all these things, you will start to see all this movement. Then the most important one is the motive and intention behind all the things you do. So I will reread this sentence again. Hopefully by now it's clear. There must be learning or self-knowledge about oneself by watching silently or just calm. But just watching the way you talk, the way you walk, the word you use, the motive and the intention behind. To be totally aware without any choice. Means you don't try to change. You don't try to justify. You don't try to condemn or justify or do anything. Just by observing. No right, no wrong. You will understand clearly what is going on. Then you will see the egoic mind's movement. How that egoic mind, because it's egoic, there is sakyaditi, self-delusion, the evil root keep on manifesting through your motive and your negative mental intention. So see that, understand how you create karmic negativity, how you develop the inability to keep your precepts, to follow the advice of the Buddha. And that will lead to karmic downfall, karmic negativity. Then you start to see the evil roots keep on arising through self-delusion, to condition you into negativity, to make you evil. Then because you lack spiritual faculty, you start to see your mental hindrance hindering your mind from entering the meditative state. And you start to see how you become heedless, how you become what you are. So violent, so deluded, so foolish, so heedless. All this, you start to see them. It's when you see, you start to awaken. Then you tell yourself, my life, is that the way I want to live my life? If I continue to be heedless, following Dhammapada was one, suffering will follow me, like the wheel that follow the hoof of the carts. So all this, you will start to understand. Then you tell yourself, if you want to change for the better, improve your life, what must you do? You have to train your mind to be heedful, to follow Dhammapada was two. Then you have to act, speak, and think with a heedful mind. A wholesome mind, free of the errors of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then only happiness can follow you, like the shadow that never leaves you. So the two teaching is the same, except Jai Krishnamurti doesn't use Dhamma. He doesn't explain it. For him, he has seen that, he understands all that thing, and he knows what to do. But the Buddha Dhamma can make it clearer for you to understand. Yeah, I realize a lot of Buddhists are very conditioned by the teaching. If they don't hear the teachings, three evil root, all those things, they cannot relate to life. For Krishnamurti, it's just very simple. You can watch clearly your motive and your intention. Then you know you are selfish, you are violent. And all this to him, no need to learn. If you don't want people to harm you, hurt you, cheat you, deceive you, then what must you do? You must not do those things to people. If you do people, the nature's law will manifest. Then you reap what you sow. Karmically, it will come back. So whatever you don't want to do out to people or out to yourself, you must not do out to people. So this is the understanding that he developed. Therefore, us Buddhists, I can use the teaching, the essential Dhamma, to explain to you so that you understand. Both are pointing to the same understanding. Except Krishnamurti used day-to-day language that normal human being can understand. You don't have to understand this teaching. That's why there is no belief. There is no dogma. This teaching is based on nature's law, based on nature's truth, can be investigated into, can be understood by the wise, each for themselves. So all this is very good. Then after that, he goes on. He said, awareness is not a matter of accumulation. This is the most important. When you are aware with the moment, with clarity, there is no accumulation. You don't deposit into your memory. You don't cling, you don't hold. It is alive. That's why it is a movement. It is in a state of flux. That's the reason why I say wisdom is not rigid. Wisdom is dynamic. It flows with the moment. So awareness is not a matter of accumulation. Accumulation means you accumulate as knowledge, experiences. Then from there, you act. How can you do that? Well, this is not wisdom. So accumulation. Can't you just be aware from moment to moment? Means every moment is new, pristine, with the clarity, with the understanding, then the wisdom will know how to act and move. Then there is no more suffering, no more misery, no more delusion. So awareness is not delusion, but just be aware from moment to moment. Then when you are not aware, begin again. The moment you are aware of inattention means you are not paying attention anymore, and you are not aware from within anymore, then you have to develop the understanding that you have become heedless. Then you have to begin again, like anapanasati. Every time the mind wanders off, you are no longer in and out breath. Bring back the awareness and silence your mind to be with the breathing. Then develop the ability to be aware. So daily mindfulness is the same. The moment you are aware that you are no longer aware, means you begin again. You determine to be aware from inside, from your heart again. So this understanding is very important. When you are not aware, begin again, so that your mind is always fresh, always within the moment, not with the memory, not thinking, not heedless. So this is a very important understanding. Learning about oneself is not at the conscious level, not only at the conscious level. This is another more difficult and to develop the ability to do it. So you listen, the last sentence is not easy. Learning about oneself is not only at the conscious level, the conscious superficial level. Because this conscious level means when you are conscious of light, it's the surface of your consciousness. That's why he call it superficial level. So to be aware, mindful at the conscious level or the superficial level is very easy. But what is difficult is the deeper subconscious and unconscious. Can you root that out too? So I read again the sentence. Learning about oneself is not only at the conscious or superficial level, but also at the deeper level, the so-called unconscious, the hidden. There is another level, the subconscious. When you go into the sleep, when you are dreaming, there is a lot of this subconscious release. Then sometimes you go into deep sleep, there is this movement in the unconscious, which is deeply accumulated, hidden, like your phobia, your deep fear and all those things, and scars of memory. So all this without condition, they don't surface. They are dormant. That's why all this, you need to relax your mind, develop the awareness to go in and release it, then root it out. That's why the subconscious and the unconscious, you can be mindful, then you can see them. These are the subtle defilements that human beings cannot see without mindfulness, without awareness. Without the stability of daily mindfulness, even the superficial, the day-to-day conscious moment, that level, also you can't see. For you to have the ability to go into the subconscious and the unconscious, the deep hidden level of the consciousness, you need to have a very stable mindfulness. You need to be with your nature most of the time. That's how you can be aware while you go into your sleeping mode. Then it's like you never sleep. The awareness is within there. Then you can see the subconscious release, the unconscious release, your dream state. You can follow everything until like you wake up. When you wake up, I still remember, it's like I never sleep. Because the same thought moment come out. Then my eye open. And when my eye open, I'm not tired. It's like I didn't sleep at all. But I am fully aware of what happened until that conscious moment. It's like I never sleep. And this is possible. This I did it when I was in 1989. When my mindfulness was very stable. And I was able to go into my awareness during my sleeping moment. That is what 24-hour meditation is about. Like throughout the day, you don't need to sleep. You're fresh. Technically, I don't have to wash my face. Of course, the teeth, you have to brush. Because after one whole night, but my eye, like I never sleep. There is no tiredness. Then I can still remember at that time, my hair also, I don't need to like comb it. It's like before I went into that awareness sleeping mode. Then I wake up, it's like I never sleep. For those who have the condition and the ability to do that, you can do it. I will start to you. Then we can talk. Then you are really beautiful. For you to have that, you already very advanced. That one cannot be done by normal people. Even those of the sainthood way cannot do it. So this is the part about Jaya Krishnamurti quote that I want to share with you all tonight. So hopefully with this understanding, for those who have progressed and have the condition to do all this work, to develop the understanding later on as you progress along the path of Dhamma. As your mindfulness, daily mindfulness stabilizes, a lot more things can surface. And you will understand things that are way beyond the Buddha's teaching. It's not to say that the Buddha never teach, because the Buddha has no condition to share all this, because these are done by the higher beings, the cultivator with great nature. Normal people don't do, you don't have to do all this. Especially the sainthood way, you don't need all this understanding. The understanding at the conscious, superficial level is sufficient. The wisdom at that level is sufficient to develop the ability to experience the glimpse of Nibbana or the wisdom. So at the moment of death, the death consciousness, you can be aware and there is no avijja. That's why you will not condition rebirth consciousness. So as Arahant, you can cease. And birth and death of the segmented life, no more, finish. But for Arahant, birth and death of the thought still exist. That's why they say outflow. The normal Arahant, they still have outflow. Because the birth and death of every moment, the thought process, they did not cease as yet. Because their mundane mind has not collapsed. So birth of that, birth and death of the, they call it the outflow of thought. That one, they still have. That one still continue. But because they have wisdom, at the moment of death, the death consciousness will not condition rebirth consciousness. So to them, the outflow of thought is not a problem. Sometimes in Mandarin, the Mahayana say, you lower, outflow, lick, there is lick, outflow. Because the thought, there is still this outflow, birth and death of thought, every moment, every instant. That one, the outflow has not stopped, has not ceased. But they have ceased the birth and death of the segmented human being or living being. Segmented body means there is no more rebirth for another segmented life to come. So that is the meaning. Okay, we are. Okay. Then I go back to page 98. Page 98 of Heart Sutta, Part 2, second edition. 2.1. Basically, there are three types of suffering. This is taught in the Theravada Sutta. The first type is suffering within suffering, or in Pali is called dukkha dukkata. In its most obvious ordinary form. So dukkha dukkata means suffering within the physical form. The suffering that living being experience, especially human being, when you go through birth, old age, sickness and death or disease. These are suffering within form. So you can cling and attach to this body suffering. It can be an injury, it can be a sickness or a disease, or whatever sensation that manifests from the physical suffering. So that one, if you were to attach and cling to this bodily suffering, then there is double suffering. That is not only your body is sick, like the Buddha said, your mind is also sick. So when you have physical sickness, when you are aware, you must reflect the five daily contemplation that the Buddha has taught you. So you have done that reflection, contemplation, then you can free your mind. Then although your body is sick, your mind need not be sick. Your mind is deep. Mind is mind, body is body. Body never the mind never the body. We choose the care mind. But body is important too, because body and mind must harmonize. We must learn how to make use of it. to live life, to cultivate, to develop the understanding, the wisdom. So all this will be understood. So this first type of suffering is more mundane, easy to come to terms with and understand. Then under the five daily contemplation, the first three, suffering within the form, the Buddha said, reflect, contemplate. Whereas this body, make up of element, it goes the way of nature. Means this one has no knowing, no consciousness, can never be you. If it's not you, then why do you worry about it getting old, getting sick and die? That's why the Buddha say, reflect. This body of ours, which doesn't belong to us, where it's not a permanent and changing entity, it goes the way of nature. It's of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. For it has not gone beyond old age, sickness, and death. So this nature's law that governs all of elements, all of biological entity or things, they are of the nature to decay, grow old, get sick and die. They are of the nature to be born into this world. So these are nature's phenomena. As a living being, not only a human, if you live long enough, you will confront them. Birth, old age, sickness and death, disease and sickness, injury, you will confront them. When you confront them, if you have the wisdom and the understanding, you will not be deceived by it, you will not be deluded by it. Because whatever that grow old, get sick and die, and that is born into this world, is not a permanent and changing entity. It's not you. Understand this, awaken to this. Then this one, because it's not you, it goes the way of nature. That's why it's of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. But it's not you. That's why you don't have a problem. That's the reason why when Sakyamuni Buddha, before he became enlightened, when he saw the four signs, the first three signs, an old man, a sick man, and a dead man, he straight away knew he has a problem where he cannot overcome this reality of old age, sickness and death. Then when he reflected, he knew all of the happiness and joy that the father has given him has no more meaning. The four seasons, the four palaces, all the good life. Where he said ultimately his physical body, which he think at that time was him, he cannot go beyond old age, sickness and death. Where the attendant told you everybody must get old, get sick and finally die. Then he said, I have a problem. That's why he decided to renounce the world, go forth and seek the answer to overcome old age, sickness and death. But that night underneath the Bodhi tree, when he awakened, when he connect back to his past, his nature, spiritual nature, then when the wisdom all come back to him and dawn upon him, then he became the Sammasambuddha. He awakened because he realized that physical body and the mind, they are dependent, originating condition, arising, causal phenomena, chemically conditional for him to come to this world, a vehicle and tool for him to use, doesn't belong to him. That one is not a permanent and changing entity. Then he realized another nature within, which is the eternal nature, the deathless element, the one that is never born, that's why it's never done, never get sick, never old. Then he realized all this is due to delusion, ignorance. Without delusion, without ignorance, all this is to be. Then he got no more problem. That's after that, he has a lot of joy, a lot of understanding. Then he tried to reflect and contemplate this teaching, which is so profound, so beautiful, so difficult for normal human being to understand. How can he share with the world? That's the reason why initially he was reluctant to share with the world. But one of the Brahma, Sahampati, I think can read his mind, then came now and pay respect to him and plead to him to teach, because he said there are some with little dust in their eye who can understand you, can understand your teaching. Then the Buddha reflected and realized, yeah, there are some who can understand his teaching. If they are still alive around, he can teach it to them. So he recalled the two teachers, Alara and Udaka. But when he checked using his supernormal ability, he realized the two just passed away. One of them 1 week ago, one of them the day before. That's why condition is such, not meant to be. Then after that, he reflected. The next most probable one is the five ascetic that follow him. Then he surveyed the world and he knew where they are. That's why he decided to walk. It took him many days to reach the place where they were cultivating. Then the whole thing just become history, recorded. Yeah, when he arrived and met up with them, he was able to convince them this time with the radiance on his face and his understanding. Then he introduced them to them, the teaching. That's why he expounded the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, followed by Anattalakkhana Sutta. That's how all the five ascetic, they finally become Arahant after the two sermon, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, followed by the Anattalakkhana Sutta, the Sutta on non-self. Before the Anattalakkhana Sutta, only one of the five became a Sotapan, Kondanya. But after he continue with the Anattalakkhana Sutta, the Sutta on non-self, empty nature, existence, anatta, all five become Arahant. They were not meditating. They were just listening attentively. That's why it's possible to awaken, not deepen. So this teaching is very powerful. If you can understand, you will awaken. So that first aspect of suffering, dukkha dukkata, I have already explained. So the first three of the five daily contemplation is to enable you to go beyond that dukkha dukkata. Then the second type of dukkha or suffering, the Buddha called it sankhara dukkata. Suffering due to unsatisfactoriness of condition state or condition dhamma. Because sankhara is the condition dhamma within the condition world. So suffering due to mental attachment or attachment to the sankhara aggregate of mind means everything that your mind do, that sankhara activity and movement, the mental state, the emotion, the whatever that your sankhara activity produce, give rise to. Could be your feeling, your perception, your content of consciousness, your mind states, all the things that your mind do. These are sankhara activity. So if you deludedly grasp, cling and attach, then there is mental suffering. So we call it mental suffering, born of not understanding that all of sankhara is impermanent, anicca. That all of sankhara leads to dukkha, suffering. That's the reason why the Buddha says sabbe sankhara anicca, because it's anicca, it's impermanent. It goes the way of nature. You cannot want things your way. If you want things your way, you will suffer. That's why from that universal characteristics of impermanent, you will understand suffering, dukkha. So sabbe sankhara anicca, all of sankhara is impermanent. And because of that, sabbe sankhara dukkham. All sankhara leads to suffering when you don't have the wisdom. But you will attach, you will cling, believing that it's real, it's you. You believe the feeling that you feel belongs to you. That's why you cling to pleasant feeling, good feeling, nice feeling. You reject unpleasant feeling. Then you attach to everything you come to perceive. Your loved one, your possession, your whatever thing that you believe you can own. All this, through delusion, you attach, you cling. Then when you cannot get what you want, because nature's law goes the way of nature, and you don't know how to arise them, that's the reason why you develop the suffering. So that suffering is mental, born of self-delusion, that condition, grasping, clinging, attachment. So when you cannot see all this clearly, especially sankhara activity, movement, the universal characteristics of thought process, sabbe sankhara anicchang, sabbe sankhara dukkang, then all of Dhamma, including the condition and the condition, is anatta. That anatta nature, you must see them clearly. So that is the second aspect of dukkha, sankhara dukkata. The last one is nama dukkata. So this one is suffering caused by change. This is what the book explained, suffering caused by change. So everything is impermanent or unsatisfactory because they are conditioned arising entity. And if you cannot accept this reality and you want things your way, then you will suffer. Because this is a universal characteristic. Universal characteristics of impermanent. Because within our condition, well, everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, not a permanent, unchanging entity. You cannot hold, you cannot grow, you cannot cling. So this understanding is very important. You don't have evil condition, your misery, your suffering. So this is how the book explained. Vipari means dukkha, suffering that arise due to change. But the way I understand it is different, because I look at the two, the number two and number three look the same. It doesn't differentiate the two. In fact, number two, sankhara dukkata, is also part of change, because you cannot understand the universal characteristics of impermanent. That is basically the characteristic of sankhara. It led to suffering. So if viparinama dukkata is also due to change, then these two have not much different. But the way I understand it is different, because towards the end of my cultivation, before my mundane mind collapsed, I saw this within my mind. That very fine suffering must be this one, vipari nama dukkata. Miss, every moment of knowing is suffering. One thing to know is suffering. Every moment of perception is suffering. Every moment of feeling is suffering. Every moment of every day of mind, even to be conscious of thing, is suffering. The mind becomes so sensitive. Just like that time when I came out to the private sector to work after 1989, when I developed the understanding where I wanted to test this Dhamma further. I want to understand what actually is the condition if I continue to come out into the private sector to test myself, so that I can go through life, subject myself to all this private sector activity. Where private sector is not like statutory body or government sector, very relaxed and don't have so much problem or situation. that can really test you out. So in the private sector, there is a lot of what they call the job nature is very different. They say very demanding, a lot of challenges, then a lot of what they call stress. They really squeeze you, they really push you. Then there are a lot of funny people in the private sector. Apart from the bosses, you have your client, you have your subordinate, then you have a lot of other relationship with people, with politicians and many other things. So you have to really subject yourself to the private sector. And I realize private sector is not so straightforward and easy. Every dollar they pay you, they may pay you more lucrative and all the same, but they also demand output. They demand a lot of things from you, contribution and all those things. And you must actually have the work for them to hire you and all those things. So private sector is very straightforward. It's not a golden rice bowl. You don't perform, you don't deliver, if the boss don't like you, the next moment he can ask you to go. Of course, you have your right as an employee. You have the industrial court to protect you. But private sector is private sector. That's why when I came out, at that time, my mind has already transformed. So the first week, I have to go through the whole thing. Then my nature inside there tell me, if you want to suffer, you continue to do all these things. But at that time, I try to read the document. I can't even read the document. But don't panic. Don't go and think after you transform, you become like that. Then you cannot live life, you cannot do your work. Then you start to develop the fear. Like just now, Christy, he thought no more thought. He thought he's going to die, no more breath. Well, when you are aware and you're so quiet, so still, there's no movement at all. Just the awareness nature. So the thought always had thinking, am I dying? Well, I'm not breathing. there's no breath. What is happening? Because the thought cannot understand new things. Understand? The thought only this is called a thought response to memory. Whatever that the memory don't have, the thought cannot understand. They develop fear. But for me, very funny. I have gone through all the meditative thing, but I never had this type of problem. Yeah, it's from the past. So what happened was when I came out into the private sector, I tried to read. Even a letter is not easy. I can feel the suffering inside, the very fine suffering. Every moment of perception that Sankara Dukkati is there. Then the fine suffering is also there. Every moment of perception, every moment of feeling, every moment of even activity of mind, the movement itself is suffering. Very fine. Then to be conscious of things also, the fine suffering inside that. That's why the time don't you want to arise your mind. That's why cessation keep on coming. Yeah. Then I come to an understanding. Think also like that, don't think also like that. We have no more reality. The world is the world. Everything is dependent, originating condition. Whether you exist or you don't exist, nothing matter. But he know you, he know me. Everything is not what you think. There is no mark of a self, no mark of others, no mark of beings, no mark of life, no mark of them. Everything is within the condition, not real. Within the unconditioned, all these are delusion, empty, no reality. So the understanding was so deep, so profound. That's why it keep on wanting to silent. But I took up the challenge to come out to the private sector. That's why I had to go through it. So I come out with my own way of doing things. I had to deliver. Where they pay me a salary, I sign the employment contract. So I have to do my part. So what do? I realize I cannot remember things. I cannot read and all those things. But luckily, my experience helped me. My understanding helped me. So I take out a notebook. Actually, it was my diary. I write down all the things that I supposed to know. It's all the factual things that I supposed to know about the project. I was in the engineering field as a consultant. And then later as a listed entity, I worked for a listed entity as a client. Earlier on, I was a consultant. So there were many things about project management, things that I have so that when I go for the meeting, I can answer them. Then there are this very high level type of project. Five-star hotel. The 2 5-star hotel in KL were done by our company. So I was fully in charge of one of the newer hotel. Hotel is done. It was the high level architect, the consultant, and even politician, the client and all those things. The contractor also very powerful guy. Huh? YTL Corporation, you know, YTL Construction. So we were involved in many of these high-level, high-profile projects and other things. So I have to attend all these meetings, and I have to answer all these questions and participate, play my role as a consultant. And I find that I was able to do it despite what happened, because I was ready. And then initially, I still remember the first week, every day after the class, not class, after my office, after I come back from the office, I realize my mind, because I have to go through all those things, I was not really in the meditative state earlier on, because now I had to do my work and all those things, then I had to write all these things down. But my mindfulness is already very stable. So because of that, I can still be aware and mindful most of the time during the office hour. But because of the amount of work, I have to use that mundane mind, that sankhara activity. And I realized the moment I come back from office, or sometimes lunchtime, because lunchtime is a 1 hour plus of lunch break. So during that time, I will go for my lunch. Then after that, I come back. I will read. Most of the time, I will relax, maintain mindfulness, and meditate. I realize my mind has become like conditioned into the working environment. Then I realize this sankhara, which long time didn't move already, still start again, no, move. Then I can see, you know, why it moved. It was because of the thing I do in the office. Then because I developed the understanding already, I just relaxed, maintained awareness. I didn't do anything. Then I saw all these sankhara activities settle down. Then immediately within less than a minute or two, I went back to my meditative state. The inner awareness, silent clarity, without thought, very fast. That's how I came to know. Meditation is very simple if you understand. No need to do anything. Relax, let things go. Then let this sankhara activity slow down and finally return to its original state. That's how I found out. That's how I came to the understanding and all that. Then I realized that time meditation is very simple. Well, my daily mindfulness, my spiritual faculty, they are all there. Then after the first week, everything fall back to normal again. Then I can do my work. And the work has become part of the religious routine. Then I go meeting. I can sit silent at the back, meditate, cross-legged. Cross my leg on the chair. Then some of these consultants next to me, they thought I was sleeping. Then because there were many consultants, contractors, so in the meeting, a few hours, the minutes were ticking. So when it come to our section, the two guy, remember the QS and the ME engineer, the two of them, they were laughing, you know, giggling. He said, this time Theo is going to head it because the architect will refuse. So when it come to my turn, so last time they used to like push the blame to my firm, Kemas Pakat. So the architect shouted, no, Kemas Pakat. The moment he shouted, I straight away answered him. Then the two guys, the MAE consultant and the QS, they were surprised. They said, he didn't sleep. he was awake. That's how I developed all the understanding. And it's possible. Then later on, they talked to me. They said, you, what are you doing actually? We observe you like sitting there like sleeping, but you're actually not sleeping. And then I told them, I do some meditation. Huh? Meditation? What type of meditation? So they thought it's yoga and all those things. He said, you can levitate. Or I said, I don't do that type of meditation. That's why there were a lot of strange things happening because society is so different. And you can actually integrate your work career into your meditation. It's not a problem. You can still do your work. You can still do your duty. But most of you will not come to this stage because it's not easy. And most of you only plan to meditate after you retire. That's why you don't have the understanding. While I was actually at the prime of my career, I was already meditating. I remember 1986, that time I was 32 years old. So I was full-time meditating non-stop. 86 to 89, a lot of things happened that 3 years. That's why at the age of 35, when I was in 1989. So exactly age 35 also happened to be age 35. Then the understanding came. Then my nature become different. That's why at that time, I almost want to call it a day and retire. But then I realized, no, my two children are still small. I still need to look at my life because that time I don't have the means to retire if the two of them were to go overseas to study. So I had to wait. So I waited for another, I think, 89 to the year 2000 is 11 years. 11 years. So the 11 years was just nice, very beautiful. I did a lot of things actually, spiritual trip, travel, also. Then I was able to integrate with my career until I was able to become very stable in my ability to be aware, to be mindful in the midst of life, in the midst of career, in the midst of my traveling and all those things. That's how all these things can happen. So don't ever arise that thought you meditate after you transform, you don't have good memory. Actually, that is good. If you don't have good memory, means you cannot hold on to things, you cannot cling on to things. But the memory is still there, I can guarantee you. The only thing is, you will not be disturbed by those memories. Like the computer, random access memory. You need them, you go and access them. You will not go and hold on to them. If you hold on to them, then it becomes attachment to memory. So AM, attachment to memory, not random access, attachment to memory. You attach, you cling, you suffer. That's how your mundane mind functions. Fear, worry, anxiety is a projection of thought through delusion, through ignorance. So all this, you will develop the understanding. So the third type of suffering, as far as my understanding, referring to the one that I mentioned, that you will experience it before the cessation keep on arising. That type of suffering is very fine and you are very sensitive. At that time, your wisdom, your mindfulness is already very stable and you are very sensitive, the slightest movement itself is suffering. Just to be aware, to be conscious, is suffering. Then even to experience that feeling, that fine suffering within, you can feel it. The movement of that mundane mind, that activity, that itself is sankhara, dukkha, really, the fine suffering inside that. So all the aggregate, you can see that one by one. And every arising is suffering. So at that time, you want to suffer, you continue to use. You continue to do that. Then it will start to develop the wisdom and the understanding. Think also like that, don't think also like that. So your mind just let things be. Unless there is really necessity, you no need to arise. So most of the time, the mind sits. You will go into the cessation. You will realize nibbana for longer and longer duration. During that time, I remember, it keep on happening. And longer and longer duration. Then it keep on coming out, going, come out, going, come out. Then later on, the mind will stabilize. Then you can work again. You can do things again. But you will not be like before already. You will not become like a workaholic. You will not go and like pop man, go and become like very diligent, very hardworking. Cannot. You work with understanding, with minimal reading and all those things. Okay. If you have to read at that time, you can feel. But later on, after everything over, when the mundane mind collapse, then I got no more problem again. I become normal again. I can read book. I can, like now you ask me to read, no more problem. All this gone. It's for you to see that face when it come. It's for you to see. So rest assured, you will not end up like become not able to do your work properly or diligently and show result. You won't have those problems. So don't have to worry. So this part is just for those who have the condition later on when you reach, so that you don't panic, you don't go and worry. But most of the time, for those who go through this, they will have the understanding one. But for me, if there is condition to share, I will share. That's why these three types of suffering is very important. Okay, so now I will go on to the notes. Suffering due to change, I explained on page 43 of the Buddha's Ancient Path, written by the author Piyadasi Thera. So here, this author defined viparinama dukkha as unsatisfactoriness due to impermanence. So according to this author, he said, all the pleasant and happy feeling that man can experience, they disappear. As the Buddha said, even the feeling of meditator experience by attaining the four meditative absorption or jhana comes under this category of viparinama dukkha, because they are transient, anicchang, lead to suffering and subject to change, viparinama dhamma. But the dukkha mentioned here is certainly not the pain or suffering that people in general endure. What the Buddha point out is that all things impermanent are unsatisfactory. They suffer change every moment. And this change brings about unsatisfactoriness. For whatever that is impermanent is unsatisfactory. So there is a Pali saying for it. Yada nichang, there is no lasting bliss because it is impermanent, it will change. So nothing can exist forever, even pleasant feeling, happy moments, they will come and they will go. Okay, so this one covers the part on the triad of suffering. Eh? There we go. Part 3, question 1. As always emphasized by Brian Teo, means by me. Oh, sorry, there's a title. How to progress along the path of Dhamma? So there was a question by one of the Kayamita. So the question is, as always emphasized by Brian Teo, right understanding and right view are very important. Then how can one progress along the path of Dhamma? So this is a very good question. You have to start with right view, right understanding, otherwise you cannot. So the question is, he said, if one lack this, then how can one develop the meditation or progress along the path of Dhamma? Yeah. According to the Buddha, the first of the Noble Eightfold Path factor is samadhi, or right view. Without this right view, you cannot proceed with the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Because if your views are wrong, obviously, then your thought will also be wrong. As thought and mental intention condition your speech and action and the way you live your life, then all the other within the Noble Eightfold Path will also be wrong. Hence, it's important to have the right view or right understanding as the first path factor within the Noble Eightfold Path. So that's the reason why the Buddha put the right view or samadhi as the first path factor. The three types of right views with regards to the spiritual law that governs life and existence are very important. And these three laws are the three right views that the Buddha spoke. First right view is the law of karma, karma niyama. Second is the law of mind, chitta niyama. So the main teaching within chitta niyama is the paticca samuppada, the dwelling. Then the third spiritual law is the dhamma niyama, or nature's truth, the dhamma that the Buddha taught. And the essence of the essential Dhamma is the Four Noble Truths. Eh? So this Four Noble Truths and its three turning is the third right view. Eh? Nature's truth, you have to define this. This is very important. Eh? That's why the teaching of the Buddha is called Dhamma. And Dhamma is just truth. Whatever that is the truth can explain the way things are. That's why it's called truth. Then nature's truth, because we live in a conditioned world which we call nature. So within nature, there are nature's law that governs nature. That's how the scientists came to understand the nature's physical law, the nature's biological law. So uttu niyama and vijja niyama. So anything that can explain the way things are true. The Buddha's advice via Dhammapada verse 183 to avoid all evil, to do good, and to purify the mind comes from the first right view, law of karma. According to the Buddha, each and every one of us is born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma, which is also one of the five daily contemplations that the monk are told to be. The five daily contemplation, the last one is this one. Yeah? Hence, the importance of each and every one of us taking care of our karma. How do we take care of karma? We need to train our mind to be ever mindful or heedful of our mental intention so that our actions are right and appropriate. To avoid all the negativity or evil karma, we are keeping our precepts and cultivating their ennoblers. This will enable us to heed the first two advice of the Buddha. And the third advice is to cultivate the 10 steps of the Abhijja Sutta, which include the four foundations of mindfulness to purify one's mind. How come of wrong path is when we are on the wrong path, we are having wrong view. How can we come out of it? Yeah. So I answered the sister. This is a very good question. Now you can understand the great wisdom of Lord Buddha in teaching us how to make sure that we won't have wrong view or follow the wrong path. We are following the advice below important cultivation and aspiration. So below I have listed all the important understanding that you must develop to develop this cultivation so that you won't end up debating, taking the wrong path. The first thing that each and every one of us must do is to take the three refuges. The three refuges, they are the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. With very strong faith and sincerity, we are understanding is important. There is no other safe refuge except in the Triple Gem, where the Four Noble Truths can be found to realize the enlightenment. This is in the Dhammapada verses. So there is no refuge safe according to the Buddha, not in the mountain, not in the mountain. The only refuge safe is the Triple Gem. If you seek refuge or protection in the Triple Gem, then you can find his teaching. And when you can find his teaching, you can realize the enlightenment. Yeah. Because it is only within the Triple Gem that you can find the Four Noble Truths, the essence of the Buddha's teaching. So this is the first requirement, refuge in the Triple Gem so that you won't go wrong. Then second is to make the aspiration by reciting the famous advice from the Buddha. How to invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for you to always avoid the foolish and the heedless, meet up with the wise and the enlightened one. And this one will keep you on the path. But you have to add in one more requirement. You must understand who are the heedless, who are the foolish. So that one will keep you on track so that you will get lost. So the second cultivation is to make the aspiration by reciting Itmina punyang kamina, mami bala samagamo, satang samagamo hotu, yawa nibana patiya. So the meaning is to invoke the power of merits to enable one to avoid all the foolish and the heedless, and only meet up with the wise and the enlightened one, so that nibana can be realized as soon as possible. So if you do these two, you will not deviate and you will not go wrong. But like I said, the second aspiration that you make, you must also develop the understanding of who are the foolish, how to recognize them. The foolish and the heedless, you know how to recognize them, isn't it? Yeah? They are the one who didn't train their mind to be mindful, to be aware, to develop their spiritual faculty, to cultivate the mind, to develop spiritual faculty so that you are constantly aware, fully aware, ever mindful to develop the meditation or the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. The meditation is taught by the Buddha. So the heedless, they are not mindful, not heedful. They think a lot. They are very heedless in their approach to life. They lie, they cheat, they deceive, they don't keep precepts. So these are the heedless. People who don't the evil root, do not believe in the law of karma. They don't have right view. They don't have right understanding. So these are the heedless people. So if you see them, you should avoid them. Avoid the foolish. Meet up with the wise. And the enlightened. So who are the wise? Who are the enlightened? the one that is heedful, the one that is mindful, who train their mind, who develops the right understanding of the Dhamma, who are free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. These are the wise one. Yeah. And the wise one is incapable of evil. They will keep their precept. They will train themselves. They will be heedful most of the time, aware, mindful. Yeah. And they have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path factor. They have the concept of life, the understanding of life, the way they communicate, the way they arise, their thought process, their speech and their action, the way they live their life. And throughout the day, they are ever mindful, constantly meditating, heedful. Now, these are the signs that you look for. They are not egoic. They are not selfish. They are not deceiving. They are not cunning. So all these are the signs. The Noble Eightfold Path factor, you should look for them. Then they are very kind, very sincere, very compassionate. They have wisdom, they have understanding. They act appropriately. Their speech leads to harmony and very appropriate, helpful, conducive for harmony, for good life, and they can teach you many things. And all of their actions are free of the evil roots. They act wisely, they act sincerely, harmlessly and honestly. Then moving on, you can also develop the cultivation by keeping in mind the three very important virtue. The first one is to have faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. That faith is very important. Then with that faith, you must have sincerity. Sincerity of action or purpose. Like the four type of clear comprehension. Then after that, what you need is to persevere. Persevere is very important. Means diligently just cultivate. Don't try to know. Just train your mind, develop the ability to be ever mindful, constantly meditating, heedful. Just cultivate. So these three virtues will bring forth the way. Always remember faith in the Buddha and his teaching, the Triple Gem. Then sincere, persevere. The way will be there. Okay, then we continue. The next part is, there's a question, I think. Yeah, question number three. You reap what you sow. Can this karma be experienced in this very life? So the question is very straightforward. But you explain, it depends on which chitina or determining thought moment the karma is being committed. According to Abhidhamma, this one for those who wants to develop the understanding, there are seven determining thought moment or chitina or mental intention to condition karma. And if it happens during the first determining thought moment, then it is only effective this life. If there is condition for it to arise, then it will arise. Otherwise, no more. It cannot carry on to future life. So you can have this type of negativity of karma, not so bad. Normally, it's not so bad. Because after this life, if there is no condition for it to arise, it will never arise. But very difficult to have it on the first determined moment. So most of these people who are not enlightened, then the decision come after the first thought moment. So normally it will land on the second, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth. Now this one will be there perpetually. I read on. Otherwise, it will cease to be. Similarly, oh sorry, that is in between. then it's only effective this line if there is condition for it to arise. Otherwise, it will cease to be. Similarly, the seventh determining thought moment, the last one, it is only effective up till next life. This one also not easy to hit. Two out of six. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 2 out of 6. If there is condition for it to arise, next life still possible. You will get into trouble. But after that, no more condition. But those to the sixth determining thought moment will be around at all time. So the answer is, it is possible to experience them even in this lifetime. Just like how you reap the result of your hard work while studying and later on working in this life. Means when you are young, you prepare for your education. Then you work hard towards the exam and all those things. Then you pass your academic education. Means you graduate from university, you have proper degree. Then you are a qualified professional. Then you can have good job, professional job. So you reap what you sow means you work hard towards it. You sacrifice the appropriate resources, time and money. Then you get to reap what you sow. So with a good, you can have a good job. Society's career normally is a measurement of that degree is very important. Your degree, you without a degree, your job is lower. Yeah. But that degree, as far as I know, is only important for your first job interview or your first few job interview. After that, people tend to look at other things. They are not keen on the degree. They look for your skill, your experience, your job scope, job experience. Then your ability to perform and deliver, then your character also, whether you can be trusted, you have the honesty, the sincerity, and whether you are hardworking, diligent, and a disciplined staff, means never cheat, never deceive, never cheat during office hour. Tau kai, you know what is tau kai? During office hour, do your own thing and all those things. So they prefer sincere staff and all those things. But for me, it's different. I like staff that are honest and sincere. I cannot tolerate people who lie. But I can tolerate people who is willing to deliver when it comes to time to deliver. So I always tell them, as long as you do your work, okay, I can be lenient with you. But when I need you, you better make sure you are around. Then if you need, like, take time off or there is something urgent, you haven't put in your leave or what, you don't worry. You call me or you leave a message in my phone, then she will contact me. Then I can cover for you. You can go. But provided you're sincere, you let me know. So based on that, I can be flexible in that sense. That's why people like me. But when I need them, they really come. They really come. They stay until late, sometimes OT. Sometimes they rush the project for me. Those staff that knows me, they always tell me, they say, Mr. Teo, for you, no problem, I will do it. The other people, I don't think I want to do it. So when you have staff that actually have that type of understanding, you also have a lot of joy. Because these are the people who is willing to work for you when you need them. So for these people, I always try to like reward them appropriately and when they need to take time off for certain thing, I say you go. Yeah. Then after you finish, you come back, you let me know. If you need to take leave, you take leave. If you don't need, never mind. Because you are the one that I can trust. Yeah. So there are certain flexibility when you have the understanding of the Dhamma. And as long as you don't go against basic nature's laws principle, that is okay. Yeah. So a lot of things in life, it depends on your wisdom and your understanding. You can be flexible in life, but not flexible according to your whims and fancy, yeah? According to your defilement. That one, be careful. Yeah? You don't go and quote me, hey, brother, you say can be flexible. Now, why are you so strict with me? You quote me and get you into trouble and get me into trouble. That is not the intention. Flexible here means there must be certain appropriate condition behind. Because if they are sincere, no problem. Then they are willing to come out and support me when I need them. Then, of course, I can agree to those flexibility. So there were many occasions during my career where I caught people who try to cheat and deceive. Then they really panic because they never expect the engineer or the boss to come down to the ground to even check on all these technician, junior technician, the lower ranking one. Because normally they don't have time to actually look at their work and all those things. They just want to know whether the senior technician or TA, technical assistant, where they are the one that control them. If they deliver, the boss normally don't want to get involved the work and get to know. But for me, it's different. I want to know my staff. I want to understand how they go through their career and all those things. And wherever they need support, help, I'm willing to stand out and help them. That's why they know this boss is different. If you really have a boss that cares for your welfare, you will actually go all out and support this boss and work for him. Because he is reasonable. He has the understanding. He has the real love. Compassion. And people who have this, they are also usually wise people, great bosses. So these are the things that you can learn. Okay, we go back to just now. Finish earlier. Oh, yeah. So we finish. Oh, just nice. 10:13. Okay, so we finish. We will end here. Huh? So the next lesson is lesson 18. Huh? We will stop at 101. So next one. Oh, next one is 19. Huh? Oh, 19. Huh? Yeah. Lesson 19. Sorry. Just now I must have got it wrong. Just now is lesson 18. Huh? So next one is lesson 19, page 102. Okay, we will stop the session, the sharing. Then we will open up for Q&A. Q&A, meditation reporting also can be included. Okay, so you can just come in, wave your hand or press whatever, unmute your speaker phone. Then you can come in while I have a drink. Anybody wants to report meditation or ask any question or share anything? It's up to you. Make full use of the time. We have maybe 10 minutes. Yeah. Anybody? Oh, tonight we have 27 of us. Anybody? Don't have. Okay, you don't have, then maybe we will do the sharing of merits. transfer merit. Then after that, we will open up for general fellowship and discussion matter, huh? So that you all can talk. Okay. Akasata Chubomata Devanaga Mahindika Punyantang Anamoditwa Chirang Rakantu Lokasasana Itta Wata Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anamodantu Sapasampati Siddhya Idang Menyatinang Hotu Sukita Hontu Nyatayo Idang menyatinang hontu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menyatinang hontu sukita hontu nyatayo. Devo asat kalena sasa sampati hituce. Fito bawatu lokoce. Raja bawatu damiko. Imina punyang kamina. Mami bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadu sadu sadu. Okay, you all can pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and all the what he wants, eh? And we can maybe stop the video recording, eh?